The copper bottom guarantee here, Alistair, is maybe fighting talk, but I believe it, is that we are going to overhaul the SNP at this election. That the Lib Dems are going to become at least the third party of British politics.
Hello and welcome to The Stooshy, the Scottish politics podcast from DC Thompson, helping you be better briefed. I'm Alistair Clark, politics reporter for The Courier. In this special episode, we are joined by Scottish Liberal Democrat leader, Alex Gough-Hamilton, to discuss the party's hopes and ambitions for the general election. With four MPs in the House of Commons, the party is hopeful it will see an increase in its share of the vote when you head to the polls later this year. I started off by asking Alex why voters should back his party.
This election opens up many opportunities, not just for our party, but for the country at large. Firstly, we have to get rid of this failing Conservative government. But we also have to send a message to the Scottish National Party, who have taken Scotland for granted for far too long. And I think your readers are warming back once again to the message, the positive message of new hope that is offered by the Liberal Democrats. Remember, Liberal Democrats have enjoyed parliamentary representation in huge parts of the North and the Northeast over many, many decades. And I, everywhere I go, I'm up in, particularly in Inverness and in Caithness, in Aberdeenshire, I try and go up every month and I find more and more people rediscovering their Lib Dem roots. And why? Because they know it's only the Lib Dems who will fight for you door by door and street by street, because communities matter to us almost more than anything else. It's why that, you know, we're listening to and acting on the wishes of people who want to get back to a time where they could see their GP at the first point of asking. They're really anxious about access to primary care. They want to see our education elevated, lifted right back up the international rankings and not squandered, that legacy squandered as it has been by the SNP, and asking children to learn in overcrowded and sometimes violent classrooms. And they want a party to represent them in Parliament that's going to clean up our natural environment, take the sewage out of our rivers and tackle the clean water emergency whilst focusing rightly on the challenge of climate change. So, you know, we're going to have a packed manifesto brimming with positivity, but really responding to the issues that people tell us about door by door and street by street.
And obviously, you know, like you say, a lot of people in this election are looking to send a message to both SNP and the Conservatives. You know, somebody who wants to do that might be looking at the Lib Dems and thinking, well, you know, the coalition government did happen in 2010. How can they be sure that, or is there a world in which your party would maybe help Rishi Sunak into Downing Street again if Scottish voters voted for them? But, you know, how would you respond to maybe some concern around that from people?
Well, in a word, no, there isn't. There isn't any circumstances under which we would prop up this failing, desperate, scandal-ridden Tory government. It's just every day brings a new outrage to the tops of people's minds about whether that's expenses or Partygate or the many sort of outrageous things that characters like Liz Truss, Kwasi Kwarteng, Boris Johnson are guilty of. We're not going to be part of that, I can guarantee that. Now, I understand your question. It's a fair question about our role in 2010, but I wasn't in politics at that time. I was a youth worker. So, you know, you're looking at Lib Dems under entirely new management under my leadership in Scotland. So I can guarantee there will be absolutely no way we keep the Conservative Party in government. They deserve to lose, and I hope they'll lose handsomely.
And something else that a lot of people, you know, ask about is the sort of influence that the Scottish leaders have with their UK parties. Do you have quite a close relationship with Davy in Westminster? Do you, you know, help shape the sort of national policies of the party quite closely?
I do. Very much. I mean, first of all, we're a federal party, so he recognises that constitutionally, you know, what I say goes in Scotland. I am the leader of our parliamentarians in Westminster in terms of the Scottish side of things, and you know, my deputy leader Wendy Chamberlain is an incredible force of nature, and I very much hope to see her return. But no, I meet every week virtually on Zoom to talk through the issues and messaging and the rest of it. But he often asked me, you know, for a final call on where we land on policy, because he recognised that certain aspects of the UK manifesto will be particular to Scotland, and I get free rein on that. So, but above all of that, you know, he's my friend, and we run a very happy ship in the Scottish Liberal Democrats and in the UK Liberal Democrats, our sister party, our federal party. So it's a very functional relationship. Yeah.
And you've opened the door slightly there, so I'll have to ask the question, but around, like, you know, the final call on policy issues, can you give us an example? Is there anything where you think you've sort of made a difference on a specific issue?
Well, I think it's definitely the case that, you know, if Ed is making policy around, say, social care, and social care is incredibly important to Ed Davey. Remember, you know, he lost both parents before he was 9 years old. He had to care for his mum when he was nine. So that's really important. But it is a very different landscape in Scotland. And ultimately, there will be consequentials at what we want to do in our Westminster manifesto that then I get to determine in terms of what the Scottish aspect of that looks like when the money comes through. I mean, it's a helpful point, actually, because people often complain that, you know, we talk about devolved matters during federal or UK elections, rather. But I think that's entirely fair. Because first of all, it's what our constituents want to hear about. I talk about, you know, ready same day access to GP services. That's not something Westminster will control. But if we have a policy which generates more money for the NHS, particularly for primary care, that will then generate more consequentials for us to spend in Scotland. And I think we have a right to say how we'll spend on it. So that's, you know, social care is a really good example of, you know, where I will set a slightly different approach than Ed, and that's absolutely fine.
Some in Labour have suggested to me, and this is maybe something you'll disagree with, but I always find it quite interesting to ask other parties what they think of other parties. Some in Labour have suggested that one thing they've noticed with your leadership is that you attempt to work quite closely with Scottish Labour on issues where there's agreement, especially when it comes to things like social care, the National Care Service, which is something that both parties have criticised the government over. Is that quite a sort of good working relationship? Do you think that's important in politics to sort of find agreement where it exists?
I think that we have, for so long, suffered under two governments which have been riven by division and scandal, that people just want some grown-ups to take over. And one of the most grown-up things about politics is laying aside your differences where you can and forging a spirit of consensus. I'm good friends with the Nasarawar, that's no secret, but there's a reason why I'm not, many reasons why I'm not in the Labour Party. I'm sure there's many reasons why he's not in the Liberal Democrats. For example, in terms of, you know, the differences, the differential, and this is perhaps what you're driving at as well in between our parties. I think that the Labour Party is still very centralised. You talk about the National Care Service. They don't like it because it's not the model they have envisaged. I don't like it because it's a ministerial power grab designed to asset strip our communities of the levers and functionality of the delivery of the care of your gran in your village. I mean, I personally believe that social care workers in Aboyne know far more about the delivery of care in rural Scotland than ministers in Edinburgh do, and that's why we oppose it. We're also different from Labour in our approach to Europe. Lib Dems are desperately trying to rebuild our fractured relationship with Europe. We have always believed and always will believe that, you know, we were fundamentally better off as a full member of the European Union, and I think Labour have turned their backs on that. And also, I think that fundamentally reform, you know, the Lib Dems care about changing our democracy for the good. I think, unfortunately, Labour have a tendency to get comfortable in overall control in Westminster and turn their backs on things like proportional representation, for which now I believe the case is absolutely unanswerable. And we need to just get down to it and change our voting system for the good.
And the National Care Service is one of those issues, similarly NHS waiting lists, where it seems like this general election will be very much a stepping stone to 2026. Is that sort of your position? Do you view it that way?
I think so. I do think so. I think, you know, change is coming, and my goodness, that's right. And we need that change. I said at the top of this interview, the first words that left my mouth were, we need to get rid of this failing Tory government. And I say that as somebody who passionately believes in Scotland's continuing place in a reformed United Kingdom. And I think that the Conservatives, far from being the guarantors of the union, are actually one of its biggest threats. They imperil the United Kingdom by their continuance presence in Downing Street. And why do I say that? Well, I think they have been a recruiting sergeant for the SNP for much of the last 16 years, or 14 years, however long it's been. And as a result of that, you know, the SNP have been artificially buoyed at every election since. I think with their removal from power, the SNP lose this suggestion that England and Scotland are somehow morally different, that we need to swim away from England as fast as possible. And with that, I think that undermines their whole edifice on retaining power in Scotland. And my goodness, that change can't come fast enough because they are failing right across the dashboard of public policy. Warning lights are blinking, crying out for ministerial attention. And that disinterest, that ministerial disinterest, has bedeviled our politics from the SNP and the Greens for far too long.
You mentioned Europe as something that sort of separates your party and Labour. The SNP would say that the most realistic prospect for Scotland to get back into the EU is through independence. You obviously would disagree with that, but could you tell us a little bit about why you disagree with that and what your sort of reason is for it? And, you know, would why you wouldn't prefer an independent Scotland to join the EU?
Well, first and foremost, the SNP are latent converts to the European project. So let's remember, this is a party that in the 2014 referendum, Nicola Sturgeon said that they'd be willing to deport EU nationals if there was a suggestion we couldn't join the European Union. Then they spent less on the Remain campaign in 2016 than they did in the Shetland by-election, which coincidentally they lost to the Liberal Democrats. But they pivoted very quickly, I think, after the Brexit vote, because they thought there were angst-ridden Remainers who might be willing to change their vote from no to yes as a lifeboat to Europe. That is a fallacy. It has always been a fallacy. And Remain voters are starting to find them out. Why? Because the accession criteria of the Maastricht Treaty lay out the terms of joining the EU. They want a structural deficit approaching 3%. Ours has been over 9% for 4 or 5 years. They wouldn't have us for years, and even the Growth Commission has said it would require austerity on stilts and massive tax rises just to get to the races for consideration. And remember, we'd still be behind Ukraine, behind other countries in the queue, and rightly so. And the SNP can't guarantee what currency we'd be using. The European Union wouldn't allow an independent Scotland to join it based on the currency plan that the SNP currently have, which is to continue to use the pound. They wouldn't have a central bank. They'd be using a foreign non-member currency, and the EU would see through that immediately. So no, I believe fundamentally that Britain, all of Britain, we need to re-heal our fractured relationship with Europe. Of course, I'd love an election to be around the corner where our membership of the EU was on the ballot paper. And there will be a day when that comes, and Lib Dems will be at the heart of that. But the Tories have so fundamentally damaged the trust that existed between Britain and our European neighbours that it will take a long time to rebuild. But it's a path we can and must rejoin. And Lib Dems' approach to that is realistic, it's pragmatic, but it is utterly remorseless. And you will see us making that case over and over again.
On to sort of another big issue that's been quite important so far in the sort of non-campaign of the general election has been on oil and gas. The SNP's policy, Labour and the Conservative policy have attracted, you know, a lot of attention, especially in the northeast where the industry is so important. Can you explain to us what the Liberal Democrat position is on oil and gas, especially around the windfall tax?
So we, I think, are in large part in step with Labour and the Conservative parties on this. I think that fair-minded people in the northeast will recognise that, you know, the energy, the market conditions following the Vladimir Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine have created, first of all, you know, huge energy price hikes, which have crippled normal domestic consumers who are facing the worst cost of living crisis since the end of rationing. And by extension, the energy giants are experiencing profits they didn't expect. So I think in those circumstances, fair-minded people would say, it's all right to ask, but we're not asking for all of that money. We're just asking for the fair share to soften the blow on households. And I think it's only right and proper that we do that. The SNP have claimed that they don't support that. I don't understand how they square that with their Green partners. We've talked at length about this in Parliament. The SNP are trying to suggest that the funding settlement is not adequate as it is. I don't understand how their sums can stack up, considering now that the UK government have priced in this extension to the windfall tax into their financial workings. How the SNP can square that financial conundrum, I regret to say to your listeners, I rather suspect this is Humza Yousaf telling people in the northeastern seats he's worried about losing that what he thinks they want to hear. But actually, I think that people in the northeast are fair-minded. They understand the position. They understand this is a temporary move, but it's a necessary one.
And, a big part of those concerns that people in the northeast have is around the industry's importance there and jobs and things like that. Is there something different you would want to see a Westminster government doing to support the economy in the northeast?
Yes, absolutely. I think the First Minister had a summit on climate change and the future of the North Sea. And, the reality is that the transition away from oil and gas in the North Sea is baked into the geology of the seabed. It is a reality. It's a finite amount. And there's a point at which it becomes economically unviable to extract. So we need to use that intervening time. We should have been using that time already to pivot to that just transition, to ensure that the innovation, the world-leading engineering is retasked and repurposed so that nobody's ever without a job. They can see a line of sight to a glowing and prosperous future, where Aberdeen in particular is ideally situated to be the renewables capital of Europe. But I just don't think that other than lip service, the SNP government in particular, are alive to that. Look at ScotWind, where they sold off the majority of our prime seabed real estate for wind farms at a pittance and with no phasing. None of those turbines will be built in Scotland because we don't have the manufacturing capability yet. And at the same time, I think the UK government needs to do more on things like innovative carbon capture and storage, all of which can enlist that engineering and skills regime to the fore. The other thing I would say is that there are some bureaucratic hurdles that are unnecessarily present right now in terms of that transition. For example, I was speaking to a rig worker a few months ago who was saying he's quite keen, he does a lot of high work, but he can't understand why his safety certificates for high work on rigs isn't transferable to high work on wind turbines. They're doing all the same safety stuff, but he has to go through a huge number of health and safety courses to translate that. But he's not actually learning anything new. It feels like an artificial barrier to him retraining and joining that other sector.
And on to the sort of the campaign that's not the campaign yet. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what your party's strategy will be in Scotland? What seats in particular you'll be looking at? How you'll be planning to speak to voters? Can you give us any insight into how that'll look?
Well, I already am, Alistair. I'm already out, and you'll see from my social media output, I am no stranger to P&J country. I was up in Caithness and Inverness last weekend. I'm going up, I think, to Aberdeenshire next weekend. So I'm all around the country, and it's, we're in good heart. And it's only the Lib Dems who actually put in that spade work all year round, not just election time. So we've knocked hundreds of thousands of doors since Holyrood, so we never stop. And that's really informed our offer at this election. So, as I said earlier, that's why we understand that the most important thing to people after the cost of living is their access to local healthcare. But you asked me about, I'm not dodging your question, you asked me about seats. Look, there are huge swathes of Scotland where only the Lib Dems can stand up to the SNP. And you know where that is, because based on our history, from Cooper to Cape Wrath, from Mallaig to Milngavie. Mallaig, I'll talk about it because it's lovely, because one of the things I love most about knocking doors in Lochaber and in Inverness in particular is the fond memories that people have of Charles Kennedy. Charles was my mentor, he kind of helped bring me up the ranks as a young candidate. I miss him so much. And I think there's a real sense of still, an afterglow of grief up there for Charles, and he's so well remembered. And I just think of people like Angus MacDonald, following in his footsteps, who will be great parliamentarians, and will, I think, return to the Highlands in particular, but also into the Northeast in place of Michael Turvey, Conrad Wood. They will deliver a representation that those areas have not seen for far too long. Because as I said at the start, we care about our communities more than almost anything else, more than government ministerial limousines or being on the telly. It's about that honest to goodness public service that you used to get with the likes of Charles Kennedy. We're in high hopes, and I think we are going to grow. And I'll give you a what I believe a copper bottom guarantee here, Alistair. This may be fighting talk, but I believe it, is that we are going to overhaul the SNP at this election. That the Lib Dems are going to become at least the third party of British politics once again. We will take that slot. And if there was a poll last week, if the Tories slipped to 25 seats, that puts us in territory to be the official opposition. Look, I don't think that's going to happen. But we're definitely going to overrule the SNP.
And there's a couple of seats that are really interesting for sort of political geeks, where the Lib Dems, like you say, are that sort of second party. North East Fife in 2017 came down to a handful of votes. Where if politicians are honest, they often go into elections you know, kind of got a good idea what the result's going to be. Somewhere like North East Fife, you know, it can come down to the toss of a coin. That must be quite an interesting position to be in, where you can credibly say there's a sort of serious fight in certain seats.
Yeah, and let's remember that the boundary changes have just come in as well. So these are not the same seats as they were. I mean, they're largely the same, but for example, you mentioned North East Fife. It takes it from what I think was a 1300 majority to a deficit of several hundred votes. So again, we're going to have to fight and re-win that seat. But my goodness, you know, they love Wendy Chamberlain there, and rightly so. And I hope very much that, you know, the work we're doing feels like it's in a good place. The same is true for Caithness. That's a notional loss on the new boundary. So each of these would have to be gained again, but we're confident of those. And then you've got Mid Dunbartonshire, closest seat in Scotland. There's 149 votes between Amy Callaghan and Joe Swinson. And that's the seat we've been, I think, working the longest at, because we could see, you know, it's a seat we didn't hold. It's an itch we need to scratch. It's unfinished business and justice for Joe, as it were. And I think that seat is coming back, and we've already done a full canvas there. And for your listeners, that means that we have knocked every single door in that constituency, which is almost unheard of in that part.
That was Alex Cole-Hamilton, leader of the Scottish Liberal Democrats. Thanks for joining us, and I hope you found that helpful. We'll be back next week, March 20th. Until then, pick up a paper or log on to the Courier, Press and Journal, Sunday Post, or any of our other news brands, so you can be better prepared.